herself and a hero. She felt proud of him and of Alberto, who had turned this near disaster into a global media triumph. It was only then, after more than 12 non-stop hours, that Edith began to think about how this event could be used to further her own career. Sol 45, morning. Everyone feels so damned happy to be leaving, Jamie thought. Why don't I? They had packed their specimens and computer disks aboard the ascent modules of the LAVs. All the lab equipment and what remained of their supplies had been carefully covered and sealed to be left inside the dome with the furniture and life support equipment, ready to be used by the next explorers, if there was to be a second Mars expedition. Jamie felt as if he were leaving a home he had lived in all his life. He remembered the hollow, almost frightened feeling in the pit of his stomach the day he and his parents had left Santa Fe for their new home in Berkeley. He had been 5 years old then. Funny the things you remember, he thought. The dome echoed now with emptiness. He felt sad, despondent about it. "Message coming in for you," Alizeman told him, startling Jamie out of his reverie. The astronaut was manning the communications console until the last LAV was ready to lift off. Jamie followed him to the comm center and sat in front of the main console. He was surprised to see Edith's face on the screen. She looked very tired, as if she had not slept for days, but happy.
Jamie, I've been trying to get through to you for 5 days now. The project people have finally let me send a personal message to y'all. Alberto and me, we've been on the air almost non-stop, trying to do what you guys call damage control for the project. Alberto gave them a blow-by-blow account of your rescue, and I saw to it that his version of what happened to you all got out on the air before anybody else had a chance to say diddly-squat.
Jamie grinned at her image. No matter what she was doing with her private life, Edith had become part of the Mars team.
Now, they only gave me a minute of their precious transmission time, so all I got time to say is, I'll be waiting for you in Washington when you get back. I'll be the full-time regular space correspondent for cable news, and I expect to get a private and exclusive interview with you. Don't matter who else you've been talking to, if you get what I mean, I want to interview you. Understand me?
She looked out from the screen expectantly. Jamie glanced over his shoulder at Zeman, who busily pretended not to have been eavesdropping. Okay, Jamie said, knowing it would take more than 12 minutes for his words to reach Edith. A complete and exclusive interview. Like the one we did in Galveston, when I found out that I'd been selected for the landing team. Maybe you can arrange to meet us at the space station. Zero gravity can be a lot of fun. He sensed another person standing behind him. Turning in the chair, he saw it was Joanna, looking at him with a strange, quizzical smile playing on her lips. She held up the fingers of both hands to him. 9 fingers. We'll be in transit for 9 months, Jamie translated her silent message. Joanna walked away, still smiling, and Jamie realized that she was telling him that the trip back home was going to be very different from the voyage outward.
It is time to suit up, Voznesensky said.
For the last time, Jamie said to himself, 1 final hour or so in the hard suits, and then we'll be aboard the spacecraft and ready to start for home. Everyone headed for the airlock and the racks of hard suits waiting for them. Zeman and Dr. Yang went with Tony Reed, the diminutive Chinese physician walking in front of the Englishman, the husky astronaut behind him. Like a prisoner under house arrest, Jamie thought, they're already blaming him for the scurvy outbreak. They'll want a scapegoat back on Earth, and they've decided it's going to be Tony. Reed looked pale and withdrawn, but when he saw Jamie coming up beside him, his old, crooked little smile returned.
My God, James, you look positively morose. Don't you want to go home?
Sure I do, but Jamie knew it was only partially true.
You want to continue exploring Mars, don't you? Reed said.
Don't you?
No thanks, Reed said fervently. I've had enough of this dust bowl. I'm looking forward to England and rain and flower gardens.
Jamie thought of the desert where his Navajo ancestors lived. How much like Mars it is, yet how different.
If you're feeling so melancholy, Reed Jug, then perhaps you ought to stay here.
I wish I could, Jamie admitted. Reed hiked an eyebrow.
How are you doing, Tony? Jamie asked. I'm fine. Don't worry about me. Jamie said, I'm going to have a long talk with Dr. Lee once we get back into orbit, and with the mission controllers.
On my behalf?
Right. Don't bother.
I damned well will bother, Jamie said, with quiet intensity. I'll take it all the way up to the project directors if I have to.
Don't be silly, said Reed, and don't give me that you saved my life business again.
But they're going to make you the scapegoat for everything that went wrong with the mission.
Reed's smile turned bitter.
What about it? The mission needs a sacrificial lamb, doesn't it? One man killed in orbit, the entire ground team nearly killed by a stupid mistake. You can be the mission's hero, James. I'll be the goat.
That's not right. It's not fair.
Reed's smile turned sour.
Perhaps you'd better stay, then, my heroic friend. That's the only way you're going to get to explore more of this miserable bowl of rust. Once we get back home and they start dissecting all the mistakes we've made, there will never be another expedition to Mars. Never.
Jamie saw that the others had gathered around them, faces questioning. Even Vosnesensky looked doubtful, scowling worriedly. They had reached the row of lockers where their dust-spattered hard suits waited like the battered armor of knights who had sought the Holy Grail. Jamie turned round to face Reed. Calmly, quietly, he said, "There will be no scapegoats among us. Not among us. We're a team. Even when we get back to Earth, we're still a team. Without heroes and without goats."
"I wish that could be true, Jamie," said Reed, with real yearning in his voice.
"It will be."
"It can't be. The project directors will never trust me again. I'll get a polite handshake and be mustered out into private practice. And think of what's waiting for Mikhail. Our noble team leader fractured every rule in the regulations and thumbed his nose at Lee and the mission controllers. Mikhail's career is finished."
Vosnesensky grunted. "So I will retire. I have achieved my dream. I was the first man on Mars. I will not return. I don't think anyone will come back to Mars. Tony is right. There will be no more expeditions."
"For how long?" Jamie demanded. "For my whole lifetime? For 100 years? 1,000?
"I don't think so. But even if it happens that way, what of it? We'll come back to Mars one day just as surely as the sun rises."
"Really?"
"Yes. Because we have to. The human race has to. We're explorers, Tony. All of us. Even you. It's what brought you here. It's built into our blood, into our brains. That's what science is all about. Human beings have to learn, have to search and seek and explore. We need to, just like a flower needs water and sunlight. It's what made our ancestors move out of Africa and spread all across the Earth. Now we're spreading all across the solar system, and someday we'll start to move out to the stars.
You can't stop that, Tony. Nobody can. It's what makes us human."
Reed backed off a step, then lifted his chin a notch higher.
"Very pretty speech, Jamie. But most of the human race doesn't give a damn about Mars or anything else except their own squalid little greeds. They're going to close down the Mars project, Jamie. They're going to kill it.
They'll try, I know. They'll do their best to shut us down. And I'll do mine, because I'm not going to rest until they send another expedition back here. If I have to do it with my bare hands, I'll bring us back to Mars."
Jamie stuck his hand into his coverall pocket and pulled out his bear fetish. He reached up and put it on the rack beside his gray helmet.
"And to prove it, I'm going to leave this little fellow here to greet me when I return."
They all stared at the fetish. Jamie had not allowed any of them to see it before. "My grandfather would say it has powerful magic," Jamie told them. "But the real magic is in us. We make things happen."
"We're coming back to Mars, all of us who want to,"
Reed huffed.
"A gesture. A symbol," Jamie corrected.
"Speaking of gestures," Ilona said, stepping through the group to stand between Jamie and Vosnesensky, "I had intended to do this in private once we were aboard the spacecraft."
She took from her breast pocket the dog-eared photograph that had been taped up over her bunk. Staring solemnly at Vosnesensky, Ilona methodically tore the photo into small pieces.
"Mikhail,
They have wronged you and all the Russians on